NFL. It's the Football League podcast scratching its head at some of the decisions made in boardrooms across the country this week. Coming up, Blues board bark, Eustace, we have a problem. Borough bag bragging rights, Cheltenham score a goal and sacking season is well underway. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we are here to run you through all the big news and notes from the Football League of the last 7 days. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined today by Sam Parkin. Hello.
Hello, Matt.
We've also got Adrian Clark alongside us. How are you doing, Clarky?
Yeah, hello. Yeah, good to see you all. Shout out to Polly's dad, who's Polly's the goalie for my daughter Evie's team. And he revealed that he was a listener this week. And he said he was playing it in the car and Polly was listening and could hear my voice or whatnot. And that's Evie's dad. And she said, why can't you do something interesting like Evie's dad in terms of a job? Which I thought was a bit harsh, but it tickled me. So shout out to Polly's dad. I can't remember his name. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm sure if Polly's dad was honest, he would have said it might be interesting, but it's not particularly well paid. So
no, this is true. I mean, this is absolutely true.
We all have our crosses to bear, but look, we're here to talk about all sorts today. A triple header of sackings that happened last week. There's one that's happened more recently than that, though. Before we get into that, how about a reminder of the offer from our friends at Quinbet? They've enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, first up, we're going to get into our weekend review. Now, way back when on Friday night, John Eustace was celebrating masterminding a win for Birmingham over their local rivals West Bromwich Albion. It lifted the Blues up to sixth in the table and all was well. Then on Sunday, reports emerged Wayne Rooney was after his job and a club statement promptly arrived on Monday morning. It was a weird one. This is how it starts. It is essential that the board of directors and the football management are fully aligned on the importance of implementing a winning mentality and a culture of ambition across the entire football club. With this in mind, Birmingham City has today parted company with head coach John Eustace. Sam, that's a lot of waffle. And corporate speak, it's also pretty nonsensical because a winning mentality comes after winning games and they just won a game. What on earth is going on here?
I don't really understand the statement. I don't know. It can only boil down to the owners wanting someone with a little bit more of a profile and maybe more attractive football. But I think John Eustace has definitely improved the spectacle at St Andrews. And I don't think it's an overnight fix. The problems have been so vast and so damning over such a long period of time at Birmingham. I don't think the squad right now can transform itself into a free-flowing, exceptional championship side, but I think they're on the right path. You look at some of the names that came in the summer, good signings, exciting signings, not to catapult them into certainties for promotion. And I just don't get this. And it's nothing against Wayne Rooney at all. And obviously, I've got to be careful and I've got to be balanced because I consider John to be a friend of mine. And I'm very fond of him. And he's got 7 or 8 years good experience now coaching, had the opportunity to go to Watford, to Swansea. He chose Birmingham as his next port of call. See, geographically, a dream for him because he's a Birmingham boy and he's done a fantastic job. They're unbeaten at home. I had a quick look at their record last two seasons, 19th in that regard in the division. So he's galvanised the fan base in a decrepit stadium that's fallen to pieces, that had so many problems, and everyone's been behind him. And they've beaten Leeds at home, they've beaten Plymouth at home, beat West Brom, local rival on Friday. The timing of this is just bizarre. And again, it's nothing against Wayne Rooney, because who's to say in time that he might not be a success? But at the moment, you cannot compare. You cannot compare in experience and the jobs that they've done. And I thought at Derby, I don't know what Clarkey thinks, but I thought he did okay. But the word was that Liam Rossini was doing a lot of work on the training ground and was putting a lot of the ideas into the players for the type of football we were seeing. So he's a complete unknown quantity. Hope he can go on and become a good manager, but we know there's no guarantees with the top players. I want Clarkey on this, actually. tactically, which of the top, name me some top players that have been great tacticians. I don't know if the top players in the Man Uniteds and Chelsea's and Arsenal's of the 90s, when you were a top player playing with amazing players, I don't know. Were you a student of the game? Did they need to be great tactical minds? I think you just went out there with equally gifted, amazing players and your jobs were pretty much self-explanatory. I think the game is changing as I sit here and waffle, and people that haven't maybe got that football background playing at the highest level, there's more desire and there's more time to learn about the game and become a tactical master. I've gone on too long there. Pep Guardiola apart, Arteta apart. I mean, Arteta wasn't an amazing world-class player, I wouldn't say. He was a very good Premier League player. But, you know, I think John Eustace did an amazing job at Kidderminster. I thought he did an amazing job as an assistant under Warburton and Steve McLaren, and rightly got his opportunity, and he's been doing a magnificent job at Birmingham. So this is just the wrong decision. Sorry.
I'm sure he'll do a magnificent job getting QPR out of the relegation zone in a couple of weeks as well. Here's Richard Jolly. Birmingham have sacked managers in 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022 and 2023. Their manager throughout 2015 was Gary Rowett, the last Birmingham manager with a higher win percentage than John Eustace, and who they also shouldn't have sacked. Clarky, just to play devil's advocate for a bit, this is something that we've touched on before, but actually, obviously this is bad for John Eustace now, but he walks into another job at a mid-table championship club, doesn't he? Whereas if he'd gone on the run of, I don't know, losing 4 of 6 for Birmingham, he maybe wouldn't. So is there an argument to say the timing is not as bad as it could have been for him?
No, he's red hot. He'll be in demand. He'll walk into any championship job that he wants. He's been heavily linked with a Glasgow Rangers job as well, hasn't he? So he'll fall on his feet because his stock is high. It's just classless, isn't it, from Birmingham's new owners to not even pretend to drag it out until they've lost a few games, you know, just to literally whip him straight out of the role the minute that Wayne Rooney lands back in the UK, and to really not thank him for the good work that he's done, and to claim really that he doesn't share their ambition and winning mentality, I just think is quite a horrible way to say goodbye. If I'm honest. It's clear that they think they want to be world class. I've heard Gary Cook say this: we want to be world class in everything we do. Well, yeah, Wayne Rooney was a world class player, but he's not a world class manager. Nowhere near it. I agree with Sam. You know, Eustace is a far better manager so far in his career. So it's a stars in their eyes appointment, where they think that Wayne Rooney is suddenly going to transform this group of players and get them playing like Manchester United of old. It's not going to happen. Wayne Rooney, actually, the football was quite attritional at times at Derby County. It wasn't that exciting. So they might be in for a little bit of a surprise, the owners. For me, it's an old pals act. You know, Gary Cook is very, you know, he's the CEO now. Very good mates, I think, with Ring Rooney's agent. And it just feels to me as if that they've cooked this up, you know, just they think this is the way forward. The owners are obviously starstruck by it. You know, Wayne Rooney, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. But the bottom line is it's, you know, for football reasons, it's a very, very strange call. And I feel for the players because I think they were enjoying it under John Eustace. You know, he's got nice little balance there. He's got some flair players. He's got a little bit of grit in there. You saw that in the last week. You saw a really expansive performance to beat Huddersfield where the attackers were all on fire. And then you saw a more resolute, gritty performance against West Bromwich Albion where it was about moments and then hanging in there and then producing a moment. You know, first time, by the way, in 2 years that Birmingham have come from behind to win a game as well. So it's a nice way for him to go out winning a derby game, John Eustace. But yeah, I don't think Birmingham will win too many friends because of this decision.
Congratulations on the inadvertent cook pun, but the American accent needs a bit of work. I think I'll give it plenty of time to make that. Well, Birmingham's next game, we should say that as we're recording this on Monday lunchtime, Rooney hasn't been appointed, but we are all expecting that to be the case. If he is, his first game after the international break is going to be away at Middlesbrough. And I think we can say that their shaky start to the season is well and truly over.
Aldale Fry, and it's driven in brilliantly. Ball in, Greenwood was lurking, and Middlesbrough make their one-man advantage count. Middlesbrough on the approach again. second. Matt Crooks that time. The Teesiders have backed Sunderland into a corner in their own backyard.
So Sunderland 0, Middlesbrough 4 in the Weir Tees derby then. That's 5 wins on the spin now for Michael Carrick's team, who register their biggest ever away win against the Black Cats. They're just 4 points off the playoffs. Clarkie, did this one turn on that Dan Neil second booking in first half stoppage time, something he said to ref Jared Gillett, apparently? I mean, you could make a case that he maybe could have had a red card for the challenge that got him booked in the first place. Certainly if it was in the Premier League, I think he would have.
Probably. Well, Jared Gillett is part of the Premier League group, isn't he? A select referees. Not that I think he should be. I think he's been involved in a lot, and I mean a lot, of high-profile gaffes as Jared Gillett. I don't know if this is a gaffe or not. You don't know what Dan Neil said, do we? I think referees are a little bit eager sometimes to send players off. Sometimes I think they could use a little bit more common sense and just sort of say, come on, don't speak to me like that. You're on a booking. Next time you do that, you're off. You know, he could have done that. But chose to apply the letter of the law very strictly, and it really hurt Sunderland in the game. I think it came at a bad time for Sunderland because they were just on top. I think the first half an hour, Borough had done great. They quietened the crowd. Obviously, it's a big derby, and they managed the game quite well then. Then they found their feet, and it's a brilliant run. I don't know if you saw it with Patrick Roberts skipping in from the right. It's like a slalom skier, wasn't he? Going zigzagging in and out of defenders. And it's a sensational save from Senny Dieng, who I think the Borough fans are seeing as a very good signing now after, you know, the team's indifferent start. That was a massive save at 0-0. Then they get the player sent off. And of course, Borough cut loose in the second half. So yeah, full credit to them, because it's not easy playing against 10 always, but they used the spare man wisely. Isaiah Jones in particular really ran amok in the match. I think he's a really exciting player, actually, Isaiah Jones. You obviously can play right back. You can play up front. You can play on the right wing. And yeah, he tormented Huggins before he went off, and then he got at Hume. And yeah, he was the architect. But you look around the team, and a lot of the players played well. It's quite a young, looking at the Borough sort of attacking unit, and it's quite young, really, with Barlasser and Hackney. And then you've got Jones and Greenwood out wide, and you've got Coburn up front. It's sort of just Crooks in the middle of them all that adds that little bit of experience. So it's, yeah, look, I credit them for inside the Stadium of Light, a massive stadium, big atmosphere. They were efficient and calm when they needed to be to get the job done. And kudos to them for it.
And a big moment for Sam Greenwood as well, on loan from Leeds. His first Borough goal. It came against the team he supported as a boy, and he admitted to having mixed emotions when he spoke to Sky after the game.
Felt a bit weird, to be fair, but yeah, I'm just happy we got the 3 points and we just keep pushing on. It was a muted celebration. Your dad was in the away end, wasn't he? Do you think he was jumping around or not?
Yeah, probably. Like, obviously, he's always supporting me, so yeah, I think he'll have been a bit all over the place. But yeah, I felt a bit weird, and that's why obviously I didn't celebrate. But I'm buzzing we got the 3 points, and we can just move on now.
Nice quotes there. I like this one from Tony Mowbray on the sending off too. In the referees' meeting before the game that the managers have to go to these days, the referee was talking about emphatically managing the game. Wow. Quote ends. Lovely little bit of shade from Mowbray there. Let's move on. And many thanks to SoJD, who left us a review on iTunes, saying, really good pundits, really good show, but it's got to the point where I wonder whether Blackburn Rovers actually exist. Well, they do, and we'll acknowledge as much as we look back on Rovers 4-0 thumping at beleaguered QPR in the company of Rangers fan Sam Parkin. So for yours and SoJD's sake, Sam, let's talk by focusing on Blackburn. They'd lost 4 on the bounce in the league before this. Dr. Ainsworth, we'll see you now. What impressed you about Blackburn?
The reason that we haven't done anything on Blackburn is because nobody has got the foggiest, faintest idea what's going to happen with them, or can possibly get a steer on them, because they're the most bizarre team in Championship history, although they were last year. Maybe there's some more sense about them now. I think they're one of the neutrals' favourites, probably, when they flash up on old Sky Sports football for a live game. I think they're really well coached. I think he's an exciting manager, despite maybe the jury still being out on him to a degree. And I think in the last couple of games, they've clearly looked a little bit more solid, although they rode their luck to a degree before their opening goal. The goalkeeper's changed. Leopold Wolstadt is in now after Pears got injured a couple of games ago. But I think they've just shifted the system a little bit. They're playing with one holding midfielder now. They were two in there with a 10. Now they're playing with two number eights. And obviously, I think that's worked over the last couple of games. And I did a little bit of digging a week or so ago. I mean, their average age in their defeat at Coventry was 23. 23. And I think of Coventry as being a pretty youthful side. I don't know about you, Clarkie, but, you know, they seem to sign quite a lot of young lads. 27 was Coventry's average age. I mean, this was boosted a little bit at Rangers because Pickering came back in at left back and Tronstad played in midfield. Sigurdsson played wide left. So the average age was brought up. But this is a lot of young lads.
Yeah. I've got the ages here. I've got them here. Dolan, 21. Moran, 19. Blocks of 18. Wharton, 19. Harry Leonard, 20. James Hill, 21. Mokinde, 22. You know, these have all had loads of game time. They're kids, aren't they? So I don't think... I think it's to be expected that results are a little bit up and down, but I think that there's the nucleus there. So, you know, a good team for the future.
Yeah. And I think in this game, yeah, the youthfulness goes out of the window. It's just about having a game plan and being well coached and having a better connection, I suppose, between the front players. And that was really evident to me in the goals that they scored. And I think that chap can comment again by all means, but I think a lot of the Blackburn fans would still be concerned about the lack of strikers in the squad. You know, is that going to be the Achilles heel again? Can they get by with Gallagher, Dolan, Hedges? They've signed Telalovic, haven't they, who's not really had an opportunity yet. Leonard, the young lad who's come in and scored a couple of goals. So is that going to continue to be a problem? Well, they've solved it a little bit in the last few weeks because I think they are conceding the most shots on average per match. And my brother amused me when he texted me after the game to say that Gareth Ainsworth said that QPR had more shots. Well, they did, but a lot of those came at 2-0, 3-0 down. And given what I just said, Blackburn do give you a chance. So, yeah, this was a victory well warranted by Blackburn. They'll continue to surprise me. Whether they're going to have enough this season to get into the shake-up, I doubt very much at this point, but as a work in progress, I think it's definitely worth sticking with.
Yeah, I echo that. I think the manager is good, Thomason. Whenever I've seen Blackburn live, I thought good coaching, good tactics, trying things that are a little bit different. He'll take a horses for courses approach sometimes. Doesn't mind a false nine on occasion as well. Leicester are the only team in open play to have more expected goals than Blackburn. You know, we just talked about how young they are, how they lack a bit of experience, how they don't have that many strikers. Well, they create loads. So I think if they were to invest, and I'm not sure whether they got the funds to do so, if they were to invest in two or three more experienced championship level performers, they'd have a real team. But, you know, whether that will happen or not, I don't know. I like the look of Sigurdsson, though. His movement's good. And two of the three goals that he scored have been really sharp finishes. So, yeah, 3 in 189 minutes for Sigurdsson. So, good start for him.
Go on, Matt, move on.
Well, before I do, I was going to say, Sammy Smodics, there was lots of chat over the weekend about him not being in the Ireland squad. He has actually got a call-up now because Aaron Connolly's pulled out. So well done to him. I can't move on to another game, Sam, without letting you vent a little.
In or out, Sam? In or out? Gareth Ainsworth.
2 points from six games, one win in 20 at Loftus Road. I mean, you can't have long left, can he, with the best will in the world and this being that international break where sackings happen?
Eustace in, getting back. It's what's available in terms of a purse, Clarkey, to entice someone new, because this isn't all on Gareth Ainsworth. Look at the team. Look at the team he's having to put out there. That's not a competitive championship team. That's a League One team, honestly. Honestly, and he had a left back at right back the other day. The boy called Duke McKenna playing in midfield who... I think he's 22, 23. If he was good enough to be in the championship, he'd be playing regularly, would have played regularly. He was at Leyton Orient last year. And this seems to be the case with quite a lot of the young players at QPR. They're not good enough. Kai Kai's been in the team this season. I think he came off the bench on Saturday. But the young players that are playing is because they haven't got anything else. And with a couple of injuries to important players at the moment and suspensions, I think Cook was missing. Sam Field is a is a big omission because he's kind of kept that midfield together. Without them, there just isn't the quality in reserve. And I'd love to look at the four players, and I've heard a few people say that the four players are good enough not to be in this mire. They're not. I'm sorry, they're not. But Sinclair Armstrong, his promise, his energy, and he's had a good start to the season, but he scored one goal. And, you know, my love-hate affair with Lyndon Dykes. I mean, you know, I lambast him and then I'll go and watch them and he'll score a brace and he'll look brilliant, but it won't happen again for another 2 months. So with Ilias Chair off colour and Chris Willock off colour and doesn't want to be there, I just don't know how they're going to turn this around. So it's not on Gareth Ainsworth, but I mean, this is now, I think, the worst home run in the club's history. 11 matches without a win, 141 year history, 19 points from 72. It's looking increasingly difficult to see how he keeps his job because they're not showing anything of a game plan. And they're not showing any kind of recovery. Those results was Cardiff taken by surprise and Middlesbrough a little taken by surprise as well. Although QPR had more experience available on those days to what they've got at the moment. But it's a crucial couple of weeks, I suppose, to see which way they go. Either they back him and he works wonders on the training ground in the next couple of weeks, or they try someone new, who I suggest not going to be taking too much dough back to the bank because they can't pay any.
Mm. Depressing. Well, look, if you want to see resurgence in action and prove it's possible, just take a look at Swansea. Four wins on the spin for Duff Mann and co. They romped to a 3-1 win at Plymouth. They've lost back-to-back home games now after letting the lead slip here. What's been behind their turnaround then, Sam? Swansea, they didn't win any of their first seven league games.
I'll keep it short, eh? Because I've gone full blast there on Eustace and QPR. I thought it was worth mentioning Swansea because I thought after the Cardiff game that the noise was going to quickly ramp up and that Michael Duff could very much be replaced a few weeks ago. And to win four on the spin in the Championship is brilliant going. It's coincided with a change of shape, but I think within that they've played a little bit more as well. There's a variety to their game now. I think there's such a reliance normally in Michael Duff's sides on the wing backs and going a little bit more back to front. I think that the profile of the midfield players in particular mean that he's got to play more. And Jamie Patterson's knitted it together really well. Patino, we know about. Matt Grimes, I think one of the best Championship midfielders. So to get the best out of them, you have to build at times. And I think that's definitely been evident in the last few games. But yeah, definitely look better with a four, essentially taking a defender out of it. Two fullbacks can still get forward. The goalkeeper's done really well. Rushworth made a couple of big saves.
Great save in the game, wasn't it, from Hardy in that game? 1-0 down.
1-0 maybe, yeah. 1-0 down. So, yeah, massive save. And I think the signings have improved them. Timon on the left back. Jamal Lowe's been really good going back in as well. And I think it's probably Michael Duff having the flexibility, actually, to do it and not just be very single-minded in what's got him success previously. So credit to him, but credit the players coming in, especially just before the window closed. Bashir Humphreys, Pedersen as well. They're looking a lot better in terms of depth, and the football seems to be winning the supporters around as well. But this could have gone either way, this game. So I'm still not too downbeat on Argyle. They'll be back, and I'm confident still that they're going to be fine.
Interesting to see how Swansea get on after the break when they host Leicester. In terms of any other business, Clarkey, that's where I'm starting. Is anybody going to stop Leicester and Ipswich walking away with the automatic promotion places? There's already an 8-point gap between second Ipswich and third Preston after Ipswich beat Preston at the weekend. A comfortable win for Leicester too. They look a cut above the rest, don't they, after 11 games, these two?
They do. I was at Leicester Preston, worked on that game, and I couldn't have been more impressed. Honestly, the quality of the football is just outstanding. Yeah, it's interesting where they invert both fullbacks, and sort of, so it's like a 2-3-4-1, and yeah, they leave the wingers on their own, and they just stretch the play, and they basically just wear teams down, Leicester, and they're outstanding. We'll talk a lot more about them over the course of this season, but I actually feel that if Leicester don't win the title and don't get over 100 points, it will be a disappointment from here, because it's as if it's just too easy for them at the moment. They are cruising it. As for Ipswich, yeah, I mean, absolutely flying. pure momentum, isn't it? And yeah, manager's getting lots of plaudits. But I think the players should get credit too, because they're taken to the level, you know, so easily. And what strikes me about Ipswich is the running power. You know, everyone, you look at their goals, the players are busting the gut to get into the box, to get on the end of things, to join in, get on the end of a cross, to make a run to support someone. There's so much energy in that team. One of my things on any other business would have been Brandon Williams' goal. The way he intercepts it and just drives right down the pitch. It's sensational. And then he pings it bottom corner. I thought he was a left back. Brandon Williams, like, what's he even doing over there? But
you know what, Clarkie? And a bang average one at that. I thought it was just someone who flew into tackles, got involved with officials. All of a sudden, like, obviously Kieran McKenna's had him at Man United, but I've never, ever seen him driving, never seen him taking anyone onward a ball. I mean, incredible. And he must have had it in his armoury, so he's either been wrongly positioned or directed by coaches previously, because he just looked like someone who was, you know, not quite up to the Premier League and looked like he was maybe going to fall down the levels.
Yeah. When a team is together and the collective is strong and they really love their manager, they run harder. Sam knows it. You know it. You just work harder as a team. And when I look at Ipswich, they look fitter than everyone else. And they probably aren't, but they've just got that mentality and hunger to go and go and go again. To try and hurt teams. Really, really impressed with them. The only other bit I wanted to mention was Philogene, someone we talked about when he signed for Hull. Classy performance at the weekend against Millwall. Really nice goal and then a fantastic assist. Little crush turn inside the box. Sold the defender and laid it on for his teammate. So, yeah, Philogene is a player I think that we'll probably end up back in the Premier League.
Sam, Jordan Ugill's screaming into his device at the moment, saying, is nobody going to mention my volley?
I was. You come to me, you set it back to me, and I'll side foot it in. Wasn't it?
It was a side foot volley, wasn't it?
Yeah. Very, very odd. I had to see it from a couple of angles to realise what had actually occurred there. But yeah, it's lovely. It's dreamy. Nice float. And he's off. He's off while it's still in the air, which
is
I enjoy as well. He knew. And Matt Taylor, what a point for him, man. Oh. Get on the pod. Get him on the pod, eh?
Mm-hmm. Well, he said keep up the good work, didn't he? He also said to me when I spoke to him, because Hugill scored a worldie in the game that I watched against Preston. He said, I've never seen him score a goal like that before. It's always just a header inside the six-yard box. He said, I don't know what's going on. And now he's done two. Remarkable. But yeah, let's get him on.
Underrated championship bagsman, isn't he? Jordan Hugill, definitely. Mm. Right, we're going to get on to League One next. Leighton Orient put some smiles back on faces in East London after the horrific incident in their game against Lincoln in midweek, where supporter and former stadium announcer Derek Reynolds sadly died after a medical emergency that forced the game to be abandoned. Orient back at Brisbane Road on Saturday, and a stoppage time winner from George Moncur gave them victory against Reading. I wonder, Adrian, actually, if having such a quick turnaround between those two games, both being home, is actually quite helpful for players and supporters alike, just to kind of deal with that tragedy and be able to move on from it.
I think so, yeah, because Richie Williams said that he didn't really fancy it. You know, he's been off colour, you know, very low in terms of training, but they didn't have long. They had to prepare for the game and as best they could, and had to be professional. And yeah, it was poignant before the game, wasn't it? And then they went out and delivered a good performance, really good. 71% possession Leighton Orient had in this game. You know, Ruben Selles was managing the Premier League last year. It's not the type of football he would want to be producing, that is for sure. But yeah, Leighton Orient, I think I said it the other week, I don't remember if it was on this show or on the radio, but I said that they'll be fine because they're near the bottom. They've been near the bottom, but I'm quite confident that Leighton Orient will climb the table because they're solid. And I think, yeah, I know that Sam's a massive Richie Wellens fan, but I do think he is a really good coach. And if you look at their record this season, they've had, I think, two or three off days, but in the other games, they've only conceded one or less in 8 of 11 games. That's good. That's really good for a team that don't have one of the bigger budgets in the division. They're up against some really talented players. You know, more often than not, they're either keeping a clean sheet or they're letting in one goal. Well, if that continues, they're going to win a lot of games. And it's just a matter of clicking up top. That hasn't really happened yet. Piggott, in, you know, fits and starts. Dan Agai is a good player. I think he'll come good. Hasn't, you know, shown his best maybe so far. But yeah, good defence, good central midfield, really strong. Mizzouni and Brown were in there this time. Really good attacking midfielders, Sotiriou, Archibald, Max Sanders has done great. And I was just looking at, because I think defence is their strong suit at the minute. And the goalie's on loan from Borough, Sol Brin. Left back's on loan from Brighton, Ed Turns. And Brandon Cooper, the centre back, is on loan as well from Swansea. So three really smart pieces of recruitment there that have helped Leyton Orient. You know, this wasn't a classic game, but they did enough to win the game. And yeah, Reading are just in a bit of a state, aren't they? I mean, off the pitch, it's not great. And yeah, I was looking at the team. I don't know what Sam thinks about this. Lewis Wing and Charlie Savage as the central midfield two in this game. When I've seen Charlie Savage live, he's played as an attacking midfielder. I know he's hard working, but not defensive midfielder. And I think Wing as well is maybe someone who wants to play in the opposition half rather than defending. So, yeah, maybe that's why they lost the midfield battle at the weekend.
Stick him on the wing, I say. some good news for Reading. Their ground was given asset of community value status by Reading Borough Council last week. That means that Dai Young, the owner, can't just sell the ground quickly from underneath everybody without any warning. So that's very good news potentially for them. Speaking of good news. The sweet if unfamiliar sound of Cheltenham scoring a goal there. Rob Street getting the honour of bagging the Robins first of the season in the league. They had gone 11 League One games without finding the net, but Street struck in the 39th minute of what turned out to be a 1-1 draw with Derby, ensuring Cheltenham avoided becoming the first team in English football to fail to score for 12 matches in a row. They got pegged back then, Sam, but I guess it's important that they actually didn't lose the game so that the goal actually did mean something and gives them the smallest of platforms to build on.
Without a doubt. Obviously not as good as a win, but they'll be thrilled with that result. Yeah, there'll be a spring in the step today coming in. It's been such a wretched start. And for Street, a relatively young, inexperienced striker, to be the one to get the goal. I know people may be listening to this and think they haven't scored for 11 games, but I'm telling you, they'll be feeling a lot better about things. And there's 2 weeks now as well, which I think is probably a good thing, because Daryl Clark's going to have to do a hell of a lot of work. I mean, it's the last place I probably want to be rocking up with my boots this morning, because he pulled out the old not fit enough line, which I hated from a new manager when you're in the midst of the season. I remember being at Luton and someone came in, I can't remember who it was, and it was like, not fit enough. And it stretched to the injured players. I got torn calf.
Literally not fit enough, yeah.
I was doing like 1,000 metres on the rower.
What was the worst run that you had to do?
Oh, the worst run. We used to do a 10 and 11 when I was in the youth team, which is laps of the pitch. It may not sound like a lot.
10 laps.
10 laps in 11 minutes.
That's hard.
It was horrendous. It was horrendous. Then the 1,000 metre runs come in towards the tail end of my career. That wasn't good. Pre-season, couple of them. But the 10 and 11 always. And the line run. Did you ever do a line run, which pretty self-explanatory? Side of the pitch. So edge of the box.
Yeah.
Edge of the 6-yard box, back. I think it was 1 minute 25 you had to get in at every line and back, basically.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, if you'd botched someone's boots, you know, or left a little bit of litter or something, that was it. Right, line run. 4 in the afternoon when you're in your jeans ready to go home.
Do you think players still do these runs? Do you think they still do it? Like all that sort of stuff.
I don't think line runs are getting chucked about, are they? At 4.
The one I remember is called...
under your arm.
The one I was remember most was increased demand, they called it, Matt. And it was a 400 meter track, and you'd sprint 50, jog 50, sprint 100, jog 50, sprint 150, jog 50, all the way up to doing sprinting 350 to have a 50 rest to then do the whole lap. And then you had to go all the way back down again. I remember one player, right? he basically was throwing up on the side of the pitch. He pulled out. And Pat Rice, our youth team manager at Arsenal, said, "Oh, you take it easy, Jace, you'll be all right. Just sit there while we finish it." And then we all finished it. And then after training, it was, where's Jason then? It's like, yeah, it made him do it again right from the beginning.
Of course he had. Of course he had.
Brutal.
Just get in front of the reserve goalie. That was my mantra, always. Just in front of the reserve goalie and you're fine.
The reserve goalie, Matt, would always be the back by miles, wouldn't they?
Did you ever fail to get in front of the reserve goalie?
Nah, just did nothing, did it? If you got a keeper that was beating the outfield players, the abuse, he's getting a barracking like throughout the run, you know, every time you come either to the side of him or he passes you, or you know, you're running across the pitch, he just get barracked. Just absolutely get behind us, otherwise we're going to be doing line runs until it gets dark. Anyway, basically we just discussed Cheltenham's week or fortnight that's coming up, because Daryl Clark chucked the old line out, not fit enough. It's a little bit of a rib shot for Wade Elliott, I would suggest as well. But in this game, I think it looked like a 3-5-2. We spoke about that last week. And Derby, interestingly, Paul Warne said as much, wanted to kind of, I don't know if bypass is the right terminology, but they didn't have much play in midfield. He wanted to utilise their good wide players, get loads of ball in the box, work to an extent. But the wide players didn't really produce, and the three Cheltenham centre-halves did really well. More drive in midfield. He knows Liam Sercombe from previous spell at Bristol Rovers, where they worked together, him and Ollie Inca, I think, kind of attacking midfield positions, joining in, energy, drive, everything you anticipate from those two. Good width, and the two centre-forwards worked really hard and obviously combined for the goal. So I think it's a pretty good match to kick off again. I know they play Forest Green, I think, in the... is it Forest Green? I think they do, in the Football League Trophy. And then it's Cambridge at home in a fortnight's time. And that's a pretty good game to kind of focus on, build towards, and hope you can get your maiden 3 points of the season. But yeah, definitely a week where there'll be a bit of a spring in the step at Cheltenham. And Derby, yeah, game plan didn't really work. There'll be frustration from the supporters given the opposition that they've dropped points to, but it's a six match unbeaten run. I still feel that, I've said it already on today's show, but I just couldn't believe they didn't go and get a guarantee 20 goals in the striking department. And I think that's going to be the thing that ultimately is going to define their season. If they can get that even spread, get people chipping in, they'll be able to make it. But last year just fell short for the same reason.
On that, one of my any other business points was going to be in regards to the League One goal scoring chance, Sam. You're talking about going out and getting a proven goal scorer. Well, I'm looking at the top 10 goal scorers in League One, anyone that scored five or more goals, and almost all of them are 30 or more. You know, or late 20s. Devante Cole, the youngest is Colby Bishop at 26. Jamie Reid, Alfie May, Dion Charles, Charlie White, Jordan Rhodes, Martin Waghorn, James Collins, Sam Hoskins. These guys are always at the top of any goal scoring chart.
Are you saying that if they had David McGoldrick still?
That's just what I was thinking.
They'd be in better fettle than they are now.
Well, yeah, or gone for any of these guys. You know, I don't know whether any of them were available, but yeah, you're right. Yeah, David McGoldrick would have helped them, but they tried. But I think, yeah, the heartstrings were pulled, weren't they, by Notts County and Didzy, as they call him. Couldn't resist. I don't blame him.
I think they probably win this game. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if it'll run true at the end of the season. They could very well make it because they got good players. But I just think Derby, their stature in League One, surely should have better front options than they've currently got.
Yeah.
Not having Jordan Rhodes has only been 33, by the way, but apparently that's the truth. Sam, I said to Clarkey, are Leicester and Ipswich going to run away with it in the Championship in terms of the automatic spots? I wonder if I could ask you the same question about Pompey and Oxford in League One. There's 5 points between Oxford in second and Barnsley in third, but Oxford have got a game in hand. I guess maybe more so Pompey, but these two very much looking like the pace setters. Do you think they're going to keep that pace?
I don't think anyone at either of those clubs would think this is a given at the moment. It's too early. it's too early. It's been a phenomenal start. I think it's great to see Liam Manning bouncing back in this fashion, and what a job John Messino is doing. I think we kind of all looked at that transfer activity and weren't wowed by it, but I mean, that just shows, you know, what he's doing on the training ground. So yeah, I think it's been a brilliant start for them. Clarkie mentioned it last week, and I've had a bit of fun with John Harley about it. You know, a lot of points taken from losing positions, obviously a more comfortable route to victory for them on Saturday, but you know, they haven't had it all their own way. It's not been Ipswich smashing teams, has it? Left, right and centre, and Leicester smashing teams. So for that reason, there's probably going to be a bit of jeopardy ahead, but those two, Bolton, Derby, you'd expect to come, and maybe a couple of surprise packages. But I think nobody in Pompey or in Oxford will be anticipating this going to be an easy ride to automatic promotion.
All right, nice open League One as ever then. Meanwhile, in League Two, after thumping Notts County on opening day, Sutton hadn't won a league game since, but that all changed on Saturday. They put four past Walsall at Gander Green Lane, much to the delight of boss Matt Gray.
Yeah, and it was exciting, wasn't it? It was good to watch. A really effective way of playing against a team who I felt have come into here for a good run. I've beaten Bradford last week and I've got some good players, but we were very much on the front foot in the first half. And yeah, we were full of energy. I'd say balls coming into the box and some of the goals we scored, some of the finishes, some of the movement and the play in the attacking half was excellent, and really pleased.
Clark, it felt like a real anomaly, that Notts County win, didn't it? This is another big victory for them. How much does it help when you score early on, when you haven't been winning games? That Amari Patrick free kick coming early in the game, cliched commentators like me would call that a nerve settler. Is that actually a thing?
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, just look at the percentage of matches that are won by the team that scored a first goal. I don't have it to hand, but I know that it's very, very high. Way above 50%, more like 70%. So yeah, no, of course it matters. And Sutton is the kind of away game where you want to make the visitors feel uncomfortable. It's, you know, it's a bit rough around the edges compared to some of the grounds. And I think that if they can get up ahead of steam in matches, Sutton United, they can steamroll the teams. And they did that, didn't they? Did that in the National League. They did it last year really strongly. You know, they weren't far away from the playoffs. It's been a tough start to the season for them. They lost quite a lot of talented players, I think, in the summer. And it's a case of rebuilding. But yeah, 4-0 win at home to Walsall is big, isn't it? Patrick's a pretty good player at this level. Harry Smith is a good player at this level. He got two goals in the game as well, didn't he? So yeah, relief for them. And for Walsall though, it's a real stinker of a result. I wouldn't have seen this one coming.
And we talked a lot about managerial stability or lack thereof, Sam, so far in this pod, and we'll do more of that before we finish as well. I guess what Sutton have got in their favour is that Matt Gray is very much bedded into the fabric, right? They're going to be wedded to him, you'd think, regardless of what happens this season.
Yeah, and wrongly or rightly, there'll be more expectation at Walsall because they're clearly more established. You know, it's a bigger fan base. It's not a big fan base by any stretch of the imagination, but I would imagine Matt Gray, because of his previous achievements at Sutton, has the backing of everyone and has an owner who really trusts him implicitly to turn things around. I thought it was interesting that Smith and Aidan O'Brien were back in tandem. Neither started the previous defeat. And yeah, along with Patrick and some of the guys that Clarkie mentioned, you know, they got the nucleus of a good squad, again, despite it being a little bit of a rebuild this summer. So we shouldn't be surprised if they pick up. Yeah, the manner of the defeat is alarming for Walsall. The inconsistency must be absolutely baffling. And he must have been seething, Matt Sadler, after this defeat, because he said as much. You know what you're going to come up against. Maybe he's a little bit hindered by injuries now, and with hindsight, maybe would have gone with a different system and, you know, another centre-half in there, for example. But I've looked at the goals and yes, you can compete a little bit better, but the first one's a free kick. The second one is actually two of his defenders getting the first contact. It's probably just that panic that Sutton's physicality and nous for the set piece sets into Walsall's players. But they're unfortunate with the first two goals and then obviously they capitulate. But look at some of the players at Walsall and, you know, should be doing better. than that. You know, Danny Johnson and Jameel Matt in attack. Jameel Matt was obviously taken off at halftime here, and Hutchinson, a midfielder, put on, which probably says that it was damage limitation at that stage, and you can understand it. You know, 4-0 down away from home, get out of there, brush it under the carpet, and hope that this consistency is going to come. But young managers, they need to be backed, in my opinion, during these periods, because it's been a number of years since Walsall have had relative success. So hopefully Matt Sadler is going to be given the time to turn things around.
All right, we're a little bit pushed for time, so I'll just say Ollie Palmer's goal was really nice, wasn't it, in the Crawley-Wrexham game. And then we'll move on to some more sackings that have occurred since last we spoke. All right, three quick ones to run through here, Clarkie. Zisco Munoz, Sheffield Wednesday have ditched him, failed to win any of his 10 championship games in charge. Will this be the least surprising thing to happen in the championship this season?
Yeah, he had to go. I mean, the only surprise is that Defon Chancery is prepared to pay him up. He just said a couple of days earlier he wasn't putting any more money into the club. Well, he's going to have to put some into the pockets of Zisco Munoz straight away, isn't he? Yeah, he'll have to cover his wages moving forwards. It wasn't working. The players that it brought in didn't improve the team. But yeah, that the head coach position isn't the main problem there. It's just everything around it, isn't it? Interesting that it does look like they're going to go for the German guy, Danny Roll, who's assistant to Hansi Flick. Never been a manager before. Highly rated coach in German football. Heck of a gamble for him. To go and work with this owner, and a gamble for Sheffield Wednesday to go with someone that is new to English football, new to being an actual manager. Yeah, I'm not sure that's the best way forward. What I found interesting at the weekend was that Neil Thompson, the stalwart, former Ipswich player, of course, from back in the day, stepped up from the under-21s, took charge of the team, basically dropped all the new signings and picked last year's team. And obviously, 0-0 draw with Darren Moore's Huddersfield. Everyone comes away with a little bit of pride intact. But yeah, that was fascinating that he basically just ditched this year's team and went for last.
All right, well, we'll wish the new Jan Sievert well for his 6 games in charge, and then Neil Warnock for the rest of the season thereafter. Mark Hughes, Sam, the Mark Hughes experiment in League Two is over. Bifter's Bradford boss, after the Bantams won just 3 of their opening 11, booed after his last game in charge, a 3-1 home defeat against Walsall. CEO Ryan Spark said of the decision to sack Sparky, "After 11 league games, we find ourselves a long way from where we expected to be." I'll let you pick your angle on this. Is that the end of Mark Hughes in management? Is Liam Richardson going to take over, or maybe a Danny Cowley, Kevin McDonald, the interim, is the favourite?
Oh, I can't finish people's careers off. You've asked me to go down that route before. I don't like going out. I wouldn't imagine.
I did that on the radio last week. I said, I think that's it for Mark Hughes.
I wouldn't imagine Mark Hughes is going to take another League Two job. Can I get away with that? I could see him maybe shuffling in at boardroom level in the Championship or something, or part of some kind of, yeah.
Saudi Arabia.
Oh, really? Yeah? No.
He'd be managing in India, wouldn't he? He'd be managing in the...
it's not a bad shout.
Kerala, yeah. Blasters, okay. Yeah.
I could see that. I can kind of trace this back to the second leg of the playoffs against Carlisle, when they had been okay in the second leg and they had Carlisle on the ropes, and then he made a couple. I can't recall what players were withdrawn or what the tactical changes was, but I was just watching a little bit open mouthed, and I think I was seeing play out what the criticism of Mark Hughes had been towards the end of last season, and that was too cautious in too many games. And I think we've seen that continue into this season, and I don't think there's any doubt that the football on show has probably improved under his tenure. They certainly played a little bit more than I anticipated, which for League Two, I'm not sure if it was genius or if it was a mistake, possibly the latter. But ultimately, you've got to be, I think when you're at Bradford and you've got aspirations to be in the higher echelons of the division, you've got to be Grimsby, Harrogate, Walsall in front of your own fans. You can get away with one of those being a day when the opponent nicks a point or whatever, but 3 on the bounce... Yeah, I mean, there's no surprise here really for me. And some of those names, I saw Carl Robinson mentioned as well, similarly to Daryl Clark going in at Cheltenham. I think if Bradford, despite the potential there, they could get the Cowleys or Carl Robinson, Liam Richardson as well, I'd probably sidle with the Cowley brothers just for the enthusiasm and the amount of bums on seats that could generate, then I think they'd do really well to get any of those three options.
So for the hat-trick then, Clarkey, Neil Harris out at Gillingham. This the most surprising for you? They've gone a whole three games without a win.
Yeah, completely, yeah, surprised me, stunned me, whatever you want to say. Yeah, I didn't see it coming. Thought Gills weren't very exciting, but by and large, they were getting good results. It stabilised the team. Yeah, they needed to score more goals and maybe play a bit more adventurous football, but I think that would have come later on in the season. Neil Harris isn't solely a defensive coach. He's coached, you know, decent teams in the past. So yeah, it did surprise me, but it's the ownership, isn't it? It's when you get a new ownership, especially from overseas with grand ideas, sometimes solid results aren't enough. They want something that's a little bit sexier, don't they? They want more goals. They want more people to come to the games. They want to sell more tickets. And I think that's a big thing in the lower leagues at the moment, in League One and League Two. I think a lot of owners and chairmen are looking at the brand of football maybe above many other things, because they want to excite the fans. They want them to pay their 20 quid or whatever it is to get into the games at various grounds to boost the coffers. So yeah, I was surprised. Two good managers linked. I mean, again, Carl Robinson is linked with this one. I mean, he is a very good manager. It would be a good project for him. Scott Lindsay's the other one. I mean, Scott Lindsay is sort of doing the rounds in that part of the world. I don't know if I'd leave Crawley. I mean, I probably would leave Crawley because of the ownership there. But he's kind of finally developed a decent team at Crawley, and he might be on his way. We'll have to wait and see.
I wanted to add that. Sorry, Matt. I just want to add that Keith Millen was in charge of of Gillingham at the weekend. The aforementioned Keith Millen was on last week's podcast, which made me think that we should probably have a quiz on this show at some point, and just Keith Millen can be the answer to every third question.
All right, I'll call it Millen time. Yeah, I saw that as well. Lovely to see one of the staples of caretaker management, the Tony Parks of the South, if you will, making his presence felt once more. We're nearly done for today. I do have a tweet of the week, though, of course. It comes from Bashir Humphreys, the Chelsea defender on loan at Swansea. A couple of pictures of Bashir in action down at Home Park at the weekend. The tweet says, mentality, full stop. Strong win on the road, exclamation mark. See you after the international break at Swans official. Stars in the eyes emoji, and then a star emoji too. Sam, the thing that caught my eye about this was just mentality, full stop. I'm not quite sure. Obviously, I'm sure what he's saying, that they had a strong mentality. But what's he thinking in terms of the format of the pros here?
I like the structure of the tweet. I think he's worked it in nicely there. It's a very modern tweet, if there's such a thing. And I like his emoji game. Okay. So I'm pretty okay with this. I don't know what you think, Clarkey. Mentality is an interesting way to start. But yeah, he's finished it nicely.
Yes, I think it's a solid effort. Yeah, no, I can't really find too much to criticise. Mentality, when you win away from home, when you go away from home and score goals and win the game, because the last goal as well was a great, they were absorbing pressure from Plymouth. It was 2-1, could easily have ended up 2-2. Then they broke forward at pace, scored the last goal on the counter. That dressing room would have been bouncing. Sam knows it. Like that feeling of going in when you've gone away from home, that feeling of delivering an emphatic away win is fantastic. And yeah, mentality. Yeah, that's what I'm sure the manager would have said afterwards. The boy, yeah, what a mentality we've got, by the way, blah, 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 blah. That'd have been in the word that's in his head. And that's why he's gone with it at the top of the tweet. I'm all for it.
Are you going to be tweeting mentality from our official account anytime this week?
Well, if I tweeted at all from our official account, it would be an upgrade on last week. I've been shocking. I've been 1 out of 10, maybe 0 out of 10 the last few weeks. Just been totally snowed, basically. But I'll try and do a bit more this week, I promise. At What The EFL on Instagram, at What The EFL on TikTok, and at EFL What The, a little bit backwards, on X.
Lovely. Gone for X as well as instead of Twitter as well. So the game really is changing. If you'd like to leave us a nice review on Spotify or iTunes, and, you know, just say my team aren't getting covered enough, it worked for So JD, we might be able to slip you in there. We'd appreciate that too. Before we go, let me remind you of the offer from our friends at QuinBet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. And if you use the link that is provided in the description of this podcast, we get a little kickback too. So if you're going to have a bet and you want to use QuinnBet, we would appreciate you doing that. All right, we are going to be back next week with another show. Join us for that if you can. Until then, it's goodbye.